Welcome to the Anonymous Andrew Podcast, Life and the Choices We Make, your online compass for navigating the wide world of modern dating. Whether you're swiping left, swiping right, or meeting someone in the real world, I'm here to help you make the best choices on your journey to finding love. In this season, I'm diving deep into the world of dating apps, breaking down what makes a killer profile, and how to spot the red flags in others. We'll also explore how to connect with someone special in real life and the art of striking up a conversation that actually leads somewhere. We will also tackle the tough stuff, like healing from past relationships and learning how to build healthier, stronger connections moving forward. So whether you're new to the dating scene or just looking for fresh insights, join me as we explore the highs and lows of modern romance. It's time to swipe smart, date better, and find the love that truly fits. Welcome to the... He's got me laughing already. Welcome to the Anonymous Andrew Podcast, Life and the Choices We Make. And I have a feeling this episode is going to be a fun one. I'd like to introduce my guest today. His name is Jonathan Astley, and he is a dating coach, a speaker, and an author. He does have a book out. Welcome, Jonathan. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Andrew. I'm honored to be on.
So I'll just throw it to you. Tell us about yourself and how you got into this.
We all have a story, just like you have a story, Andrew. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For those listening, I just want you to know, write down your story. It's worth hearing. So my story, at least where I'm at today, began almost 20 years ago after turning 40 and going through a divorce. I found myself back in the dating marketplace, but at the same time of going through divorce, I lost my high-end corporate job. And we also had the market crash of 2008 and 2009 during this period of time. And I was an emotional wreck. Actually, I began online dating and I didn't realize it became my drug of choice. And what I mean to say is I was communicating with women all across the country, instant messaging, mm-hmm. telephone calls. This was before, this was literally before even smartphones, and I was connecting with women, speaking to so many, not even dating them, just sharing our experiences, because I found it very cathartic to hear someone else's experience of going through a divorce, raising their children, the emotional effects of going through these experiences. And pretty soon, Andrew, some of these women just started to become friends of mine. And then they'd reach out to me and say, "Hey, Jonathan, will you look at my dating profile and help me make it better to attract good guys?" And then I would start giving advice. And then a month later, I'd get a call, "Jonathan, I met a great guy based on your advice." And I'm like, internet marketing began being popular around that time. So I threw up a cheesy website, called myself a dating coach. Because I remember I lost my high-end corporate job. So I was in an emotional kind of a reinvention, if you will. Or I was in an identity reinvention, and I didn't realize that within a few short years, I started to get like clients and be on guests on radio shows and telesummits and webinars and speak on stage. But I do want to preface this. During this time, I began a journey of really self-exploration, understanding the emotional effects of what I experienced. And I accumulated over 3,000 hours of workshops. I did the Hoffman process. I did Insight Institute. I got a neuro-linguistic programming certificate. I even dated a therapist, and literally I had therapy our entire relationship. It was a blessing and a curse. And it's just evolved into where now I have written several books. One book is called What the Heck is Self-Love Anyway? A Journey of Personal Development, Self-Help, and Spiritual Work. I have a YouTube channel with almost 200,000 subscribers.
Yeah, 196,000. Very impressive.
Yeah, and this is my full-time business. So
I was looking at your YouTube channel, and we just talked about this before we recorded. Your clientele is mostly women, or do you do men and women?
You know, I would say 97 to 99% are women. And particularly because when I began, I wanted to help women understand men, particularly men going through divorce. Roughly about 75% of singles over 45 years old are divorced. And certainly now when you age, there's widowers, that sort of thing. And I wanted to talk about the emotional effects of going through alimony, child support, visitation rights, and understanding that and the emotional effects of how that would affect someone in the dating environment, because a lot of men find themselves rather gun shy to a serious relationship, but they want that companionship, they want that connection, they want that sex, but oftentimes what they're lacking is a real solid commitment.
Commitment.
Yeah, and women tend to gravitate like, I need commitment first. And this is where the disconnect was happening. And that's where I began leaning into those conversations.
It does sound a little illogical, but if you really think about it, who's the best gender to go to? So if I'm a woman and I want help with men, go to a man. Yeah. And there's a podcast I listen to often, and it's three women who help men. And it's very similar to what you do. So the men go to them and they write in questions and stuff. So I think it's women, I know, often would go talk to their girlfriend. Hey, I went on a date tonight. Or they'll pick up their cell phone and they'll show them the profile. Hey, do you think he's cute? This is what he texted me. I don't think girlfriends are the best people to go to get advice.
Yeah, and I want to piggyback on that for a second, because oftentimes girlfriends have that Prince Charming syndrome. And let me explain what I mean by that, okay? It's just that there's this expectation that the man must climb to the highest room of the tallest tower, that he has to be perfect. Their girlfriends always encourage, you know, if he's just slightly off, dump him. And what I talk about is the human frailty is we're all suffering from, I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, I'm not likable, I'm insecure. Andrew, you went through an emotional trauma several years ago, and that doesn't make you any less valid to be in a relationship. But we have to understand that we human beings come with emotional, we call it baggage, but, you know, insecurities, dare I say, flaws. And love is about opening up to a person beyond the perfection. And my only criticism for women is they oftentimes give advice based on perfection. That's my criticism.
And deal breakers. I just don't like these deal breakers. If he's not into this, or if he does, some apps will have deal breakers, or and you can set them. You hear the, if he's not at least 5'10", if he's doesn't have six figures, there's all this criteria.
I think it's 666, over 6 foot tall, over six figures, and over 6 inches.
Exactly. And I've been doing this for 2 years now, and I have been single for 2 years, so I have done a lot of self-reflection. But I'm finding out that if you just swipe left on somebody because you looked at their criteria and they're like, nope, he's shorter than 5'10", you don't know what you're passing on, right? So I just think people should slow down, take a look at the profile. If there's a match, if the algorithm says you're a match, pursue it and see. And all it takes is a couple text messages, maybe a phone call, and then maybe you're not a match. Well, but
you know, in all fairness, though, let me clarify something. I'm in full agreement. If we're using superficial matrices to include or exclude someone, you're gonna, you know, what's the definition of sanity? Doing the same thing over and over again.
Same thing over and over.
Results. The challenge, though, is, you know, our current method of meeting people, online dating now represents 60-70% of all new relationships. And in other words, the old format of meeting at church, meeting through friends, meeting at work. I mean, now that each one of those categories are less than 5% of the amount of people meeting. And so the real, and the thing is, we're meeting total strangers. And when you meet a total stranger, you don't know the flavor of the person. So we oftentimes make these quick judgments based on looks, yep. based on these yep. superficial criteria. Yeah. And I will tell you, I spend all day on dating sites as part of my business. And I look at men's profiles and I look at women's profiles. And I will tell you that 98% of them are so poorly done.
I mean, yes.
So poorly curated.
Jonathan, thank you for saying that.
And the thing is it's kind of indicative, I think, of the if you're unconscious enough to put in poor effort, then how conscious are you to be even in a relationship, let alone all the intricacies of a relationship that has nothing to do with height or no, money in the bank does matter in the sense of resources matter. But if you're not focused on the core important aspects of a relationship, which are good relationship skills, emotional maturity, being able to resolve conflicts with one another without making it a power struggle. These are the core importance of a relationship. Again, if your effort goes in poor, then how much effort are you going to make in a relationship?
While we're on the topic, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we're talking about dating apps. Let's just quickly, because there are some questions I want to get to. So I have my own style of dating apps and it works. I try to limit my dating apps to one or two every subscription. Last year, I was like three or four or five dating apps at once and it was just too much, too hard, too confusing. You concentrate on one or two dating apps and I go with six pictures, two headshots, two body shots, two action shots. Show me your head, show me your body, and then show me what you like to do, your hobby, kayaking, volleyball, hiking, yeah. bicycling, whatever it is. And the bio should be short, but concise, but to the point. And I wrote something in my bio that I get every woman ask about. And it was, I don't even know if I want to say it because people will steal it. You know what? I'll tell you after the show because I don't want anybody to steal it. And it gets, but it's clever. It was clever and it was funny and I get hits from it. So I think you're right. Taking the right time to create that dating profile, it's like a job. You're not going to slap together a resume sloppily. You're not going to get the job, right?
Well, yeah. And I'd be open to even sharing with your audience my own just to give an illustration of this. You know, I'm going to be candid with everyone. I was in a significant relationship where I lived with someone for a year that ended, coincidentally, a year ago. And through that and by the way, we had a very good relationship. We had a very conscious uncoupling. It was just, there was a couple differences on her end that she didn't want to go the distance with. I was ready to go the distance. Why I'm sharing this with everyone is when a treasured relationship ends, it's very much like a death. And oftentimes people immediately go yes. on dating apps to fill that void. And I see this frequently. And they, because it's painful to lose someone and then just be to go with someone you've been with maybe 24/7 to completely gone. And I would say that one of the most important things, if you're going to put yourself back out there, is take the time to grieve.
Thank you.
A treasured relationship ending. And I'm talking about proper grief. I'm talking about going through the stages of grief, just like it's a death. And, mm-hmm. and looking back and saying, what positive things did I learn about myself in this relationship? How have I healed from this relationship? What was good about this relationship? What am I grateful for? Can I thank this person for any blessings that came from the relationship? And do I need to forgive myself or do I need to forgive them? These are some things I invite everyone to do before they go back on the dating apps. Now, I will share with you, it's important to write something that, going back to dating apps, is to write something that captures a person, you know, captures their attention. Instead of the blah, 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 blah that a lot of people write. And you know, if you don't know how to do that, hire someone to write your profile for you. Yep. There are people that do this for a living that can help you capture someone's attention. And like you said, I'm in full support. Two, excellent quality headshots. Two, excellent quality body shots, okay? And a couple other photographs that demonstrate a little bit about who you are, so long as it's important to you. If you ski once a year and you have a skiing photo, then don't waste that on that. But if you ski 30 times a year, then put it in there because that is part of what you do.
Healing. Yeah, I just want to add, that I come across this every day on these dating apps. Women have got to stop taking pictures in the mirror in the bathroom. They're still doing it. These cameras, our cell phones today have timers. There's no reason why you can't put that camera down, set it for 5 seconds and go stand somewhere or take, anyway, I just had to get that out there because no. It's just...
You are absolutely correct. If I see your camera in the photo, that's a deal breaker only because I want someone to really recognize that you are, whether we like it or not, online dating is a marketing tool. You want to be seen. If you're at a bar and you're looking at a phone, no one's going to approach you because you're looking at the phone. It's the same when I see your phone. It says, I care more about my phone than I do. And by the way, you can hand your phone to a friend and have them take the photograph. You know,
thank you, which I have done. So, okay. All right. So so far we're agreeing on many of these dating apps. All right. There's just so much I want to talk about. You talked about when the relationship ends, grieve. And I am a guilty party that I didn't grieve. That I, like you said, I jumped right into the net. I went right back on the dating because I didn't want to feel. I didn't want to deal. Yeah. And I would find somebody within a couple of weeks. And I, regardless, I just started dating. This pattern, Jonathan, went on for 30 something years. I was married young and divorced young and yada yada. And I took the last 2 years off to properly grieve and then reflect on what, and you mentioned, what did I learn from that relationship? What did she teach me that I did wrong? And what I blah blah blah. You get the idea. I'm just reinforcing what you said. You need to grieve. And everybody's grief time is different. It could be a month, could be 6 months. If it's a 25-year marriage, you should not be dating in 3 months, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I went through my divorce, I immediately went on the dating sites. This was before apps. And I remember about 5 months in, I wrote this beautiful woman, and she wrote me back, how long have you been divorced? And I said, well, I've only been separated 5 months. And she wrote me back, reach out to me in 2 years and after you've had one or two transition relationships. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm ready to be in a relationship. I'm ready. You know, like, and sure enough, 2 years went by, two transition relationships, and there she popped up again. And I wrote her, I said, hey, you were right. Like, she'd been around the block enough to know that
you weren't ready.
Certainly a divorce, because a divorce is the unraveling of the tapestry of your life with another human being. I'd been married for a decade or we'd been together for a decade and a half. And so it's not just about grieving the relationship, it's about reintegrating into who I am as a person outside of this marriage, outside of being a parent, outside of being a husband, all of these things. I had to figure out who I was. And that's why, you know, interesting enough, I shared with you online dating became my drug of choice. And I didn't realize it was preparing me for my profession. But a lot of people go online because they're hurting, they're in pain. And what happens is if you begin to bond with another person from your pain, and God forbid they have pain, because now you're trauma bonding in your
trauma
pain.
Trauma bonding.
Or in some cases, I was in pain and guess what? They became my therapist. So, you know, and so it was a win for me because I got free therapy in some cases. And this is why I believe when we start to look at romantic love from the vantage point of being intentional, being intentional. In other words, okay, I want a life partner, okay? If I want a life partner, first, I have to show up as the best version of myself. And that doesn't mean you have to be 6 foot tall, six-figure income, or six-inch penis, like we jokingly said earlier.
Yep.
It's about showing up as the best version of yourself, but more importantly, the best version on the inside of yourself. And that's two people showing up. Basically, it's in my book, What the Heck is Self-Love Anyway? Showing up as a sovereign being. And when two sovereign beings show up, it's like, hey, what's the purpose? What's the purpose of dating? Andrew, I want to invite your audience to write this down. What's the purpose of dating? And more importantly, follow-up question is, what's the purpose of a relationship? And what I mean by purpose, it's not about dinners and fun and entertaining one another. Why are we doing this? Like, really know your why. And the purpose of dating, it's a vetting process to decide if you want to explore a relationship with someone. And a relationship is a vetting process to go, is this person the person I want to go the distance with? That's the way I view it from a life partner perspective.
Again, I 100% agree. It's just, and that seems to be what the norm was for, I don't know, centuries. Courtship and everything's gone out the window today. And I think because of the dating market in today, in modern dating, people are getting sick of the dating apps and getting sick of it, of the games. And of course, now we're dealing with scams and romance fraud and all that stuff.
Yeah.
All that, we won't even get into that. I think we need to go back to the way it was because it worked back then. Even, well, like you said,
please forgive me for interrupting.
Yeah, no, you're the guest.
Because I want to draw attention to something a little bit more granular, if you will.
Okay.
You know, up until about 1960, we kind of had two gigantic things happen in 1960 that was different throughout history.
I know where you're going.
History, women were dependent upon men financially, number one. And number two, there was a consequence if you had physical intimate, sexual intimacy.
Before
there was a
marriage.
Consequence that happened 9 months later.
In the 60s, yes.
So in the 60s, when both birth control was invented and women had the freedom to go, you know, earn a living on their own, they were no longer dependent upon men. It changed everything. Now, some people will say it changed it for the worse. I completely disagree. I think a woman's empowerment and her ability to be financially dependent on herself is a blessing to our society, okay? A lot of people will argue against it, but when you're dependent upon someone else for your survival, you know, this is a tricky thing to be dependent on another human being for your survival, because they might look great in the beginning, but they can totally change into a nightmare later on down the road. And I wouldn't want to put my dependency on someone that could absolutely change, number
which
one.
Which is called putting all your eggs in one basket, which
exactly.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
But what happened is now men actually have to step up.
Yep.
In a way they didn't have to for centuries. And particularly because I think our world is craving emotional connection with one's heart. I think men and women are craving it. I think men struggle with getting there because we have been conditioned to stuff our emotions, stuff our feelings. We've been conditioned that violence equals masculinity. We've been so conditioned to be driven financially that we haven't really developed our heart. And I think modern relationships today are going through kind of a learning curve of how can couples really connect at a heart-centered level, from a partnership level, from a co-creative level, outside of the traditional norms. And we're just going through the growing pains of that right now. That's where I think we are in society.
I when you put it that way, and I knew about that transformation that happened. And I was born in 1960, although I obviously wasn't dating then. But you're right. That was when because my mom stayed home. My dad was the breadwinner. He was a doctor. My mom stayed home and watched the kids. And although ultimately she went to college for nursing, and she became his nurse once the kids were kind of grown up and in school, then she would go work for him. But yeah, anyway, I the 60s and 70s changed a lot when the women started burning their bras. And I remember all this. Yeah, you remember those days?
By the way, I want to give credit, or I want to identify something. A lot of women went to the extreme where they began hating men and rejecting men.
Yes.
And, you know,
yes.
I'm not advocating for some of the extremes that happened in the movement, but what I'm mostly identifying is that it's important to be a sovereign being. That's what I'm talking about. Whether you're financially dependent upon someone else or not, being that sovereign being. And in the dating marketplace today, we have actually a fairly emotionally wounded population. Andrew, you went through an emotional trauma 2 years ago when your relationship ended. We have a gigantic population of people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s. The population of singles now in that age demographic is growing rapidly, number one. Number two, single people are probably outnumbering couples now in the world. We literally have probably more singles than we do have couples.
Yeah, I heard that. I did hear that.
I'm going to say married. I don't, the only because there's no statistics of boyfriend and girlfriend type couples.
Cohabitating.
Yeah. And the reason is a lot of people are emotionally hurting because they had a relationship that ended and they didn't properly grieve it. They didn't properly heal it. They just feel like, hey, let me just go find a new person. That's going to make it all better. And then they go into that, what I said earlier, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. The average person today has probably had 5 relationships that are 3 months or longer. And if they're still single, that means they've had 5 failures.
Correct. Like, the
rate is actually rather low.
Mm-hmm.
And to some people, then they go, why bother? Well, here's what I want to share with everybody. A dear friend of mine once said to me, Jonathan, love is a risk, but it's still the best game in town. And I hold space that, you know what? I would much rather be a hopeful romantic and put myself out there and, you know, make the effort by putting myself out on dating apps, going out on dates, meeting people, learning about myself, getting to know another human being without all the pretense. And you know what? Just like a broken clock is right twice a day, people do find love, really extraordinary love out there.
Okay. Wow. Jonathan, that was... We could do a whole episode just on this topic alone.
Yeah.
However, so we're halfway through. I know you're on a hard stop. So let's talk about some of, in your bio, you have some things that really caught my eye, and I'd like to go over this. So, for example, and this I would really love your take on it, why men, and then you put in parentheses, over 40, pull away, ghost, or disappear?
Okay, I'd be happy to share that. And the reason why, again, I talk about over 40, it's just simply because most people over 40 that are in the dating marketplace are divorced. And so why would a man pull away? Well, the reason why that's such a popular topic is women are the gatekeepers of sex. And today, sex happens very early in the dating process. But men are the gatekeepers of commitment. We have been so conditioned that men do the asking of marriage. It's always a woman going, you know, where's this relationship going? When are we going to commit? There's always like women.
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, I'm an advocate for women to go, look, if we're not in a fully committed relationship, I'm done with you. You be empowered and you should know where your relationship going. You don't need to ask it because that means somebody else has your power. But since that's the narrative, why do people pull away? Variety of different reasons. One is they might be gun shy of commitment. In other words, they want companionship, they want connection, they want physical intimacy, but they don't want to fully commit because they've been hurt before.
Hurt. before. Okay. I knew that was coming. Yep.
Okay. So with that said, commitment requires the desire to be in a committed relationship, the capacity to be in a committed relationship, and the vision of a committed relationship has to exceed the fear or the pain you have Correct. In the past. If your fear or pain exceeds your desire, your capacity, or your vision, then you want companionship, you want connection, you want sex, but that fourth piece of commitment, this is where you're going to be wishy-washy. So you give mixed signals. Men come on. By the way, women hear this all the time. Men are the hunters. Men love the chase.
The hunters and gatherers.
Yeah, but I'm here to say, ladies, do you think men walk around going, I'm hunting a relationship. I'm hunting. Do you think men actually go, I'm hunting a relationship, or do we hunt sex? So let's be clear. When you hear these narratives, sex doesn't equal relationship success. Commitment doesn't equal relationship success. So they pull away. The other thing is they might be hung up on a past relationship. They may still have they still have feelings for someone else. They have feelings for you. They have feelings for someone else. They start acting wishy-washy. We pull away. We ghost. We disappear. If he's struggling financially in his life, again, he wants companionship, he wants connection, he wants sex, but he's going to be wishy-washy because the ground underneath him isn't solid. If a man is going through emotional crises or physical crises, like physical meaning the structure of his world, like needing money to survive, or his physical life, he's not going to be able to fully engage in a relationship.
No. He's not capable, even though he might think he can or fake it, but no, he can't.
Yeah, desire is not the same as capacity. So when I said to you desire, but your capacity might be low, but the desire might be there. Like, I mean, I remember I told you about the woman who said, reach out to me in 2 years and
two years.
I said, I'm ready for a relationship. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, I realized she was right. I might have desired it, but my capacity wasn't there.
And that's funny because even though I wasn't married for like 40 years, I did have a 10-year marriage and then a second 10-year marriage. It really wasn't a marriage. It was cohabitation, but we had a child. I've been in these long-term, and then many, many, many short-term, 2 years, 18 months, 3 years. And that went on for 20 years. And this last one that just tore me apart, I had to stop and say, I need to take a look at what I'm doing wrong. I'm 60 years old and I haven't had a healthy, the audience knows this. I'm also an alcoholic in recovery. So a lot of that I can blame on my alcoholism. I got 10 years sober. But even in those 10 years of sobriety, I was doing the same thing. I was making mistakes. Let's talk about the next topic.
Okay.
And I think you and your book is about this, about self-love. Because when that last relationship ended, I was self-loathing. How did I let this happen to me? This woman was cheating, and I don't have to get into everybody, but at the time I was a victim and I was hurting, and I knew I was not ready to go into another relationship. So I took 2 years off, and I had to learn how to love myself, how to be in my own skin. And your next topic here is why dating is the best path to self-love.
And folks, I'm going to share something for your audience. So my book was birthed after the loss of my 19-year-old son. And in my grief, I began really wanting to understand love in a way that I never did before. I wanted to understand what it meant to grieve with love. I wanted to understand what it meant to love myself, to really what it means to love. And I began this soul searching to loving myself. And what I mean by self-love is I mean self-worth, self-esteem, self-confidence. Because I was in a space of self-doubt, self-questioning, self-criticism, self-crucifixion, self-hatred. And not just because of the loss of my son, just because I may have experienced a lot of things where I doubted myself. So I began this exploration. The thing was, Andrew, was I realized that dating triggers the number one emotional health issue. Dating and relationships trigger the number, like, and that is, I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, I'm not likable. Dating and relationships trigger our shit like nobody's business. So it occurred to me that self-love is like, you know, when you're flying on an airplane and the flight attendant says, in the case of cabin pressure change, oxygen masks will be delivered. And if you're traveling with a small child, put the mask on yourself first. The mask of oxygen is love. In other words, we can't be a benefit to another human being until we are a benefit to ourselves. And so, you know, when we go through heartbreak, when we go through challenging times, it's important to resource ourselves first. And it's not, self-love isn't about manicures and pedicures. That's self-care. Self-love is like, is about doing the inner work, the healing from your past, being introspective, being self-aware. Self-aware is recognizing your fears and insecurities. Self-awareness is recognizing your judgments towards other human beings. Self-awareness is knowing your limiting beliefs and your negative patterns. Self-awareness is knowing that your actions have consequences for others and being in integrity with yourself and with other people. This is all encapsulated in self-awareness, which is a function of self-love. Taking self-responsibility. You know, many people go through the ending of a relationship and they point the finger at the other person.
Yep.
But there's three fingers pointing back every time you point a finger. And it's like examining, what was my part? And listen, you could have been with a narcissist, you could have been with a toxic person, but you have at least 3% culpability in there.
Oh.
100% ownership of that.
When that relationship ended, I took all five fingers and pointed them at her until I began to heal and process and talk on this podcast and go to therapy and my support groups. And then I realized, so one of the other questions here, which is a good segue, I knew I was in the wrong relationship, but I didn't know, number one, how to get out of it because she was beautiful and I thought I would never find somebody like this again. I was very insecure and I didn't have any self-integrity. Yeah. One of your next question is early signs that you're in the wrong relationship. So I was in the wrong relationship. I just didn't know it or didn't want to. I was in denial.
Yeah. And
so can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, I think the best indicator you're in the wrong relationship is when you do not feel safe enough to be yourself. You don't feel comfortable enough to be yourself. You are afraid to speak your truth, particularly if your fear is that they'll leave you. And let me just say this to everybody who's listening. Chapter one of my book is Speak Your Truth, Just Do It With Kindness. Chapter nine is, if it's sincere and from the heart, you can't say the wrong thing to the right person. If you are speaking from your heart and this person can't accept, or you have a fear that they'll leave and you have duct tape over your mouth because you're afraid they're going to leave, then there's a good chance you're in the wrong relationship or that your relationship needs work to get there. Okay. I think that's the, and quite frankly, you know what fascinates me, Andrew? I've interviewed thousands of people after a breakup, and it fascinates me how often I ask the question, were the two of you really good friends? And in many cases, there was an attachment to the other person, but they weren't really good friends because good friends get along with each other.
Correct.
That's not to say that, you know, there are other reasons why a relationship ends, but when I ask them to really examine it, and the problem I've noticed, just like what you did, the relationship ends and five fingers are pointing at the other person. If that's your relationship ended today and you pointed all five fingers at the other person, you're not in the right relationship.
Correct. Just real quickly, just to give you and the folks listening And I have told this way back early. By the way, I listened to one of my episodes this morning, my first episodes 2 years ago, and I was in a completely different space than I am today. She went on a vacation 6 months into the relationship, and I couldn't go because she gaslit me about why, and she was visiting somebody. And I got some inappropriate pictures from her. They weren't sexual. They were just she visiting a friend of a friend, a family member or something. And I just didn't like the way the pictures looked. Anyway, I called her out on it. I said, these are inappropriate. And she said to me, if you don't like it, there are plenty of men waiting to take your place. And I just backed down right away. So she was establishing her power. I tried to establish a boundary and she just pushed right through it. And I was afraid of her leaving me. And that's it. And you did say that. So that is
now,
a problem.
I'm curious, Andrew, have you studied attachment theory?
Yes, I have anxious attachment.
Okay, by the way, me too. So just so you know, we're in the same camp. Folks, if you're listening right now, if you haven't read the book Attached by Amir Levine and Rachel Heller, again, I'll repeat that, Attached by Amir Levine and Rachel Heller. I mean, there are a number of different attachment books. I could rattle off a dozen of them, but that tends to be kind of one of the premier ones. Although attachment theory, it's understanding that we oftentimes attach in an insecure way to another human being versus a secure way. And let me just say this, this book is starting to become outdated. There is even more, it's a new field of understanding, but at least you can get the baseline of understanding. And when I say outdated, I think I don't think attachment theory has been studied with divorces in mind and the ramification of divorces versus the early childhood upbringing. Okay. And so understanding that we oftentimes attach to another human being in an insecure way. Mm-hmm. And if you start to do this inner work that I talked about, that's what self-love is. It's a journey of self-exploration. When you start to understand how you attach to another human being, you can begin to make better choices going forward.
It's interesting because that's the official name of my podcast. It's just the Anonymous Andrew Podcast. But then I dubbed it or subtitled it The Life is Life and the Choices We Make, because I made poor choices all my life in choosing the wrong women and choosing to stay with them when I knew that I saw the red flags, the gaslighting, but because I was so afraid to lose them or I'll never find that. Let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
Theory that this woman that you, in this case, this woman was a Latina. She was absolutely beautiful and stunning. And she was an actual Miss Universe in another country many years ago. It was just 10 out of 10. And I was like, I'll never get the caliber of woman like that's at the time. That's what I thought. Today, I don't think that way. I went on a date 2 weeks ago. The woman was absolutely beautiful. And we're dating, sort of. We've gone on a couple of dates. So to those thinking that you'll never find somebody as beautiful or like that, you will. But you have to have that self-love, the health, the self-integrity. I was so afraid of the anxious attachment. She had the avoidant attachment. I'm going to throw a question at you that's not on your list, but I think you are probably one of the best guests that I've had that I can ask. Is there really such a thing as a midlife crisis for men? You hear about it all the time.
So what I'm about to share, I coined about 10, 12 years ago. I do believe that there is an awakening that happens that usually happens around between age 35 and 50, give or take. And what this, and I'm going to use the term awakening versus crisis just because it's, I'm reframing it in the affirmative versus a negative, okay? But here's the thing, Andrew, you and I grew up in that baby boom Gen X period of time, right? And I was also born in the early 60s. And so many, and I suspect you had kind of the same upbringing. You had intelligent parents. You had probably a middle class or a slightly above middle class upbringing. And we were raised like this. After high school, go to college, get a job, meet a girl, get married, buy a house, start a family. That was Bingo. Our programming, okay, mm-hmm. for a significant percent. And by the way, this carried through well into, you know, the Gen X mm-hmm. period of time. It started to shift because after Gen X, divorces began becoming mm-hmm. so much more prevalent that
they skyrocketed. Blueprint
didn't exist in the same way. Okay, now, here's what happens. You wake up one day and your blueprint doesn't look like your reality. And that when that collides, when the blueprint collides with the reality, all of a sudden, hence the term crisis or awakening or shift that happens. In fact, there's a movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. I think it's called Revolutionary Road. I could be mispronouncing it. That illustrates this in the 50s, okay? Or the 60s, it's actually is the time that he has his crisis, 50s or 60s. It's a very valid thing. Now, what happens to most people is that they don't deal with the emotional ramifications of your dream, not realizing your dream. And people choose drugs. They choose alcohol. They choose self-medication. They choose online dating to be their drug of choice. That's what I did in my midlife crisis, if you will. And instead of addressing, because for many men, they have an identity crisis. It's a real legitimate identity crisis because we men have been so conditioned that our identity is directly related to what we do for a living. And we might have chose a profession that we're not happy with either. And so, and we might be doing it purely out of sacrifice, purely out of obligation, purely out of responsibility, and it eats us up on the inside. Now, let me just be clear. Women have a different type of crisis, if you will, and they have equally an emotional awakening or ramifications that happen. It's just in a different format, okay? So I don't want to discount that they might find themselves in the wrong marriage and they stick it out. They might find themselves that they are become an emotional eater because they're unhappy and they no longer have the physique that they once had or the looks. Like, there's so many. That's why I said dating and relationships trigger our need to love ourselves.
I would like to bring up another topic. It's not a topic we have to talk about, but women, so the men have midlife crisis, and maybe some of us might have ED down the road, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Women have menopause, and that's a real physical midlife crisis. They go through, what I was told, up to 10 years of a menopause. Could be, it's perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, and it could last 2 years, it could last 5 years. And so that's somewhat of a midlife crisis for women, where the men have their type. So,
well, you're talking, you're differentiating between the physical changes.
The physical.
And there's no doubt about it. But the physical has an emotional ramification to it. Just like for men, I mean, our whole identity is tied into our penis to some degree. And when that
and if it doesn't work.
And our testosterone levels drop. And again, I want to give equal due. Women have just as much emotional and physical crisis as men do. We have to stop making one more than the other. I think it's just important to recognize this is just the reality of life.
I couldn't agree more. Jonathan, wow, we're really on the same, not only the same page, but we're on the same book today. Okay, let's begin to wrap it up. I'm going to give you 5 minutes to tell us, let's pick a scenario. Married, I'm 45, 50, I'm married, I'm divorced now, maybe I wait a year, I grieve, I go through all the divorce paperwork and stuff. How, well, you coach women more, but.
Oh, I can help men too.
You can help men. What does somebody do at the age of 50? They're just all of a sudden, like you said, that architecture blueprint just got torn up, right? You know, forget midlife crisis. They now want to go back out and dating. How do they start to? They were married for 30 years. They have 3 kids. They're up. They're off to college. They're all of a sudden they wake up in the morning in whatever another apartment somewhere because the wife got the house or whatever, or vice versa. This is for women too. How do we begin to self heal and then move forward? What's the best?
I love this question. So, you know, first, I want to invite everyone to really look inward and say, what do I really want, particularly when it comes to romantic love, okay? And what I mean is human pair bonding. What do I really want? If you sincerely are not ready for a full-blown commitment with someone, then just be in integrity with other people, because the reality is a person could get attached to you, envision a long-term future. And again, just being in integrity with everyone that you engage in. I'm a big proponent of men in particular being committed to commitment. And what I mean to say is, if you want a committed relationship, then be committed to it, which means be intentional. And being an intentional is recognizing that you're identifying what are your core values? Like, what values matter most to you? Is it health? Is it charity? Is it reciprocity? Get a real sense of what's your core values. And when you're in the dating marketplace, focus on someone who shares your values, number one. Number two, and this is the tricky part, Andrew. Most of us at midlife have a kind of a fully curated life, and somebody else has a fully curated life. You have to be able to blend those lives together for that relationship to work. So be mindful of how your lifestyle is and how another person's lifestyle. The Brady Bunch ruined it for us because it gave us a false sense of you could just easily blend. Yep. It'll be perfect. And Alice will take care of the house and Carol could be at home, you know, doing, you know, nothing. And Mike Brady has to go work and the kids will find a way to survive on one bathroom. Okay. Yeah. Six of them. Okay. False sense of blending lives. But here's the most important piece. A successful relationship requires emotional maturity. And again, if your fears or pains from your past exceed your capacity, your vision, or your desire to be in a relationship, then I invite everyone to do the personal development, self-help, spiritual work, and therapy to go heal, to go understand. Yep. Your negative patterns, your limiting beliefs. Do the inner work. Read a book. I'm going to recommend a book to everybody. It's called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. Andrew, it should have been titled Compassionate Communication. We human beings oftentimes communicate in a very confrontational way. Your ex-girlfriend said, take it or leave it. You know? That is a very toxic, volatile way to speak to somebody you care about. Do the work to become a better communicator and then, you know, put yourself out there. One of the things I love about 12-step programs, just to piggyback on your experience, you know, when you're doing group therapy with other people and you're hearing other people's experiences, you learn to become a much better communicator of your feelings because you are being forced to get into your feelings.
Vulnerable.
Group therapy, being vulnerable, exactly. And to be authentic and be transparent. And when you do this enough times, you actually, believe it or not, doing the hard work frees you in a way you can't even describe. You actually become a more actualized human being when you do the heavy lifting ahead of time. That's my invitation for that person, man or woman. And that was the Cliff Note version of it.
And I can attest to that because the 2 years that I took off, I'm a completely different person. I would like a woman on my arm. I would like to be able to have a connection with somebody and live. But if it's not meant to be or it's not happening or yada, 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 I'm comfortable where I am. But 2 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, I got to get back on match.com and find somebody else. Today, I'm actually a little scared to get, because I'm enjoying my singlehood.
Oh. Yeah. It's nice not having to be responsible for anyone else but your own thoughts and feelings.
But you get lonely, you know? So
hell yeah.
There's two sides to that coin, and the grass is always greener, yada, yada. Jonathan, tell us where we can find you online, and then we'll say goodbye.
Folks, my name listed here, Jonathan Asley. You can Google it. You can find me on YouTube. I have a very popular channel on YouTube. I have a website. I have a podcast called the What Would Love Do podcast. And just follow me on YouTube, or you can get my free gift on my website and join my mailing list.
Wow. I like the fact you have a podcast. I'm going to go listen to that. Okay, oh, I'll put all
just the YouTube videos that are recorded for the podcast. That's
oh, right. Okay. I'll put all this in the show notes. So
yeah,
everybody will. I see you're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok. So you, like me, you're everywhere. So, you know, It's funny because people are telling me social media has become the devil. But, you know, for people like us, content creators or coaches, or we depend on social media to get ourselves out there. So,
yeah,
Jonathan, thank you so much for joining me tonight. You're just a delight to talk to, and you were full of information that and I can't thank you enough.
Andrew, it's been my pleasure. I feel like we're kindred spirits in some sense. And I look forward to connecting with you again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, everybody. Jonathan Astley, and I'll put all his information in the show notes. I would like to thank Jonathan so much. Like, I've been preaching what we just talked about for the past year, about the dating profiles and how to set them up and the intentional. Jonathan, thank you. You just validated everything that I've been preaching. And folks, if I sound a little hoarse, it's because I had my atrial fibrillation ablation yesterday, and I was discharged last night, and they put a breathing tube down my throat for the procedure, and my throat is really sore, so I shouldn't even be talking, but I had to edit this episode and get it out for you today, because the podcast goes on no matter what. Right? So, speaking of which, I could use your support. If you look in the show notes, under right above Jonathan's information, by the way, check out his YouTube and his Facebook and his website. Just an amazing man. Gosh, I wish I found him years ago as a dating coach. But although he does help the women more than the men. But anyway, I could use your support. This podcast is coming up on 2 years, and I am not sponsoring, having sponsors or advertising, but it costs money to produce this podcast, and I have another podcast that I work on, as you know, Cultimatum, which we dive into cults, and the bills are piling up, so anything that you could help. In the show notes, there is a little link called Buy Me a Cup of Coffee. Ugh. You know what? The general anesthesia is still in me, so I'm a little loopy. Please, if you could help the show out, and please give us a review down below, all right? In Apple or Spotify, you can leave a review, and subconsciously, I will say 5 stars. And thank you for listening, folks. And we will have... I got to think about this. Christmas is a week away, and I dropped my episodes on Wednesday, so I gotta see if I'm gonna drop an episode on Christmas. I just might do that, just might, because you don't have to listen to it on Christmas, you can listen to it anytime that week, so why not. All right, folks, I'm gonna go crawl back into bed and relax, because I'm supposed to be on bed rest. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Anonymous Andrew, ciao.